Now, some advice on how the U.S. should deal with Iran from policy analyst David Makovsky. Makovsky and former Middle East negotiator Dennis Ross are the authors of Myths, Illusions, and Peace, Finding a New Direction for America in the Middle East. A big chunk of their book deals with Iran, and David Makovsky's co-author is now in the Obama administration helping to make policy on Iran and not available for author interviews. But David Makovsky, you are. I'm glad to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Robert.
You and Dennis Ross recommend what you call a hybrid approach to dealing with Iran, neither tighten the noose and hope for regime change, nor jump into talks without any preconditions at all. What is this hybrid approach? What's the virtue of it?
The hybrid approach is to say that the two other approaches often brought forward, one is by the neoconservative school that tends to view negotiations as a waste of time and believes the only thing that counts is regime change. The school identified called realism, which we don't always think is realistic, is a belief that deterrence always works. Like it worked in the Cold War, it doesn't matter if they have nuclear weapons, because just as the Soviets were deterred, so will the Iranians be deterred. We think there are some differences in this context between Iranian decision-making and Soviet decision-making. Some would say, well, of course it's different. You have a messianic leadership with Ahmadinejad and Khamenei. Others would say, no, they're not a messianist, but they're rational actors in the end. But even if you say that they're rational, there could be a lot of miscalculation.
So talk with the Iranians, become involved, you say, in diplomatic dealings with Iran to try to prevent them from developing nuclear weapons. Preconditions?
No. We think that the last administration tried preconditions, and we didn't think that was successful. Our belief, what we call the hybrid approach, is based on the idea that with Iran, we're giving them an unmistakable opportunity that if they want to join the international community, we're giving them the way to do so. At the same time, we are consulting with all our allies, with Russia and China, and saying to them, you wanted us to talk to Iran, we have to convey to Iran that there are clear economic and other consequences for failure.
So you guys be prepared to impose sanctions. We'll go in to talk. You, Germany, Britain, France, you be prepared to really
at the right moment. You know, clearly you would ratchet up with failure. I mean, failure has very profound consequences for them.
One way that you describe that in the book is no preconditions for Iran, but preconditions for our European allies.
Exactly.
Relations with the U.S. and Iran have been so minimal in the past several years that I think it's a bit of an eye-opener for many people to realize that there have been landmark moments during this period of non-relations. One of them is the episode of the Iranian fax that you and Dennis Ross write about. Describe what happened.
Well, it was right after the toppling of the statue, so to speak, of Saddam Hussein, and Iran feared it was going to be next. And through the Swiss ambassador, a fax was conveyed to the White House, which says that Iran is willing to talk, and about the agenda that the United States has wanted to talk about as well, not just the nuclear program, but support for Hezbollah, Hamas, et cetera. I think, unfortunately, the administration at the time didn't run with this and test it. We have no way of knowing.
They didn't answer it. They didn't respond.
Exactly. And some would say, well, it shows that Iran will respond to pressure because it was only because of the events of the time and the fear would be next that it did what it did. But I think this was a moment that was a clear opening, and I think it was missed.
A foreign minister of an important U.S. Ally recently said to me and others, when asked whether Israel faced an existential threat from Iran having a nuclear arsenal, no, was his judgment. He said they don't, but if Iran had nuclear weapons, it would be a much more consequential rival in the region and would impose its will in many other places. Do you think that the Israelis are concerned that even though they have a nuclear arsenal of their own that they will not publicly discuss, that they live in fear of an Iranian missile with a nuclear warhead on it? Or do they live in fear of Gulf states and Emirates and the like being cowed by a stronger Iran?
I think it's all of them. You know, one Arab official said to me, look, we know the Israelis have a bomb, but they keep it in the basement. Our fear of Iran is if they get a bomb, they will wave it. And given the historic enmity between Iran and the Arabs, this is something that is of concern to them, and a belief that Iran with a nuclear weapon, as the president said, is a game changer because all these other states will want to have their own nuclear program.
Saudi Arabia would want a nuclear arsenal. Egypt wouldn't want the Saudis to be the only Arab state with a nuclear arsenal. And as you say, the Turks might then follow and also want to be a nuclear
power. Absolutely. And you don't know how this will lead to proliferation to non-state actors? Will they export Iran a dirty bomb to its allies, Hezbollah and Hamas? So I do see it as a profound game changer. And as we try to point out in the book, it'll be a very different Middle East.
David Makovsky, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much for having me, Robert.
David Makovsky and Dennis Ross, who was not with us, are the authors of the new book, Myths, Illusions, and Peace, Finding a New Direction for America in the Middle East.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.